हरिहि ॐ सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सहवीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै। शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः। ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
Vaishampayana continued. Varga then addressing Arjuna finished her discourse, saying, "Hearing these words of the Brahmana, we saluted him with reverence and walked around him. Leaving that region, we came away with heavy hearts, thinking as we proceeded, where shall we all soon meet with that man who will give us back our own shapes after our transformation? As we were thinking of it, in almost a moment, O Bharata, we beheld even the eminent celestial Rishi Narada. Beholding that Rishi of immeasurable energy, our hearts were filled with joy. Saluting him with reverence, O Partha, we stood before him, with blushing faces. He asked of us the cause of our sorrow, and we told him all. Hearing what had happened, the Rishi said, in the lowlands bordering on the southern ocean, there are five regions of sacred water. They are delightful and eminently holy. Go ye thither without delay. That tiger among men, Dhananjaya, the son of Pandu, a pure soul, will soon deliver you without doubt from this sad plight. O hero, hearing the Rishi's words, all of us came hither. O sinless one, true it is that I have today been delivered by thee, but those four friends of mine are still within the waters, the other waters here. O hero, do a good deed by delivering them also." Vaishampayana continued, "Then, O monarch, that foremost of the Pandavas, endued with great prowess, cheerfully delivered all of them from that curse. Rising from the waters, they all regained their own forms. Those apsaras then, O king, all looked as before. Freeing those sacred waters from the danger for which they had been notorious, and giving the apsaras leave to go where they chose, Arjuna became desirous of once more beholding Chitrangada. He, therefore, proceeded towards the city of Manipur. Arriving there, he beheld on the throne the son he had begotten upon Chitrangada, who is called by the name of Babruvahana. Seeing Chitrangada once more, Arjuna proceeded, O monarch, towards the spot called Gokarna." Section 220. Anyone knows where Gokarna is? It's a famous place.
Near Goa.
Near Goa. Okay, Gokarna is near Goa. Okay, so that means he was going south, but then he went back to Manipur, and then he continued around. He was just making that trip, going down to Bengal and around. So it's north. He went across the top, the north, down to Bengal, then from Bengal down to south, and then he'll come up to Dwarka. Vaishampayana said, "Then Arjuna of immeasurable prowess saw, one after another, all the sacred waters and other holy places that were on the shores of the western ocean. Vibhatsu reached the sacred spot called Prabhas. That when the invisible Arjuna arrived at that sacred and delightful region, the slayer of Madhu, Krishna, heard of it. Madhava soon went there to see his friend, the son of Kunti. Krishna and Arjuna met together and embracing each other, inquired after each other's welfare. Those dear friends, who were none else than the Rishis Nara and Narayana of old, sat down. Vasudev asked Arjuna about his travel, saying, Why, O Pandava, art thou wandering over the earth, beholding all the sacred waters and other holy places? Then Arjuna told him everything that had happened. You know, you can see here is that in the Vedic context, when there's penance, then it's done by doing something purifying, right? Actually purifying. You go to all the holy places, you know, you stay out in the forest, you don't mix with people much, these kind of things like this. So it has a much better effect than, you know, contemporary concepts where you just kind of away somewhere, you know, don't get yourself involved and stuff like that. You know, still they also had jails for criminals, but the point is, we're talking here of purification. Like that, if someone of character has done something wrong, then they're purified by performing spiritual activities. Like that. Then Arjuna told him everything that had happened. Hearing everything, that mighty hero of Vrishni's race said, "This is as it should be." And Krishna and Arjuna, having sported as they like for some time at Prabhas, went to Raivataka mountain to pass some days there. Raivataka is just where Dwarka is on the mainland, like that. And Prabhas is a little bit north. It means if you go from Dwarka and you go straight up across the water, that's Prabhas. And I think that if you go from there to the east, onto the land, then you get Raivataka, like that. Before they arrived at Raivataka, that mountain had, at the command of Krishna, been well adorned by many artificers. Much food also had, at Krishna's command, been collected there. Enjoying everything that had been collected there for him, Arjuna sat with Vasudeva to see the performances of the actors and dancers. Then the high-souled Pandava, dismissing them all with proper respect, laid himself down on a well-adorned and excellent bed. As the strong-armed one lay on the excellent bed, he described unto Krishna everything about the sacred waters, the lakes, the mountains, the rivers, and the forests he had seen. We see here that they're, it's understood that these are traditional things, you know, music, dance, all these different things. These are all part of human life. The refinement, it's very important. So they go together, is that there's a proper balance in the Dharma, Artha, and Kama. So then you have nice food, nice music, dancing, nice clothes, nice, you know, everything's, you know, very fine. It refines the brain tissues, right? The idea is that the human being is supposed to understand their relationship to Godhead. And so then this happens, I mean, it makes it much easier when the brain is refined, right? There's so many finer brain tissues that are there that we don't use, right? So by drinking milk, by chanting Hare Krishna, by being in very aesthetic or nice environments, it refines the brain tissues, right? Whether anyone notices it or not, that's another thing. But that's like why the school is done in the way it is, because it develops the finer brain tissues, you know. Not necessarily anyone here will notice it, but other than it's something that you pull on the leaves and, you know, knock over and step on. But other than that, then, you know, that's the purpose of it. So these things then are there, and then those people that take part of it are very important. Though at the same time, they are in a particular position because art is their main interest. So that being their interest, they're expressing themselves through the art, which is important. They can connect that to Krishna because the singing, the dancing, the dramas are about Krishna, right? But at the same time, it's because of the publicness of it, then they're considered very common, right? Entertainers are considered to be in a very common position. Important, but it's common, right? So since there's more common people, it's not uncommon for common people to be engaged in this way. But those who are being trained, you know, how you say, as leaders of the society, they don't get involved in such public performances like that. Does that make sense? As a profession. One is the men can do public performances if it's, you know, for, you know, a closed group. You know, your own persons and stuff like that. But women will never do that. Women will only do performances for other women, right? Or their direct family, like that. That's how it works. So there's still a slight difference there. Like Lord Chaitanya would do dramas, is that famous one. He did a drama in Shrivas Thakur's house. So he played Radharani, Advaitacharya was Krishna, and, you know, different persons played like this. But, you know, so everybody would see there, but it was all the men, right? Because, you see, Lord Chaitanya, he's playing Radharani, right? Like that. We didn't get Sita Devi to play Radharani. Like that. So, like that, it will be done. But otherwise, the ladies, they never do that in public. It's just not done. But they're doing it, it's amateur. They're just doing it as a devotional presentation. Does that make sense? But as a profession, then that's artists. Like that. So it's very important, but the leaders of society won't take that position up because there's more important things they can be doing. Not that art's not important, but it's what they should be doing. Just like Vaishyas will take up, you know, economics, because that's very important for the society. But they won't be taking up the art. Same time, they're not doing administration or teaching and those things. Everyone specializes. Kshatriyas, then, they know all the arts and that. They're very expert at it. They can play music. Otherwise, how do they appreciate? In other words, if the Brahmin Kshatriyas and Vaishyas don't know music and dance and these, how they'll appreciate it? How they'll know that the artists are doing a nice job, or how they'll appreciate what's there? You know? Like that, you know. So then, the more you know about something, the more you can appreciate its fineness, its the details, its the subtleties. So everybody would be trained in it, but as an occupation, the artist then would take up art, the Vaishyas would take care of economics, Kshatriyas would take care of administration, Brahmins would take care of education. That way, everybody's specializing, the whole society got the best out of it. You understand? So there's a difference. There is a hierarchy at the same time as it's not that important. Does that make sense? As devotees, it's not important, meaning as your status in society, but still the social structure remains. It means the duties of them remain. Does that make sense? That's why only the Vaishnavs can appreciate the culture used in this way. Non-Vaishnavs, then it has to be very blunt. Very obvious. Their social status is based on their occupation and everything. But for the devotees, then it's not the social, it's not the occupational status. Then it is more the devotional status. Does that make sense? You have varna and ashram. So for non-devotees, the varna is the main importance. For the devotees, then it's ashram is more important. Right? Because ashram is spiritual. And varna is social and economic. Does that make sense? Yeah. So it's a slight difference in the focus. So we see here as he's been out, and so then Krishna and Arjuna, they spend their time, you know, together like this, like that. So. Okay, so he spoke about all the sacred waters. So then also just this very nice holy places, discussing about them, what was there, what you saw, what you did. These are very nice discussions, right? Rather than, you know, I went to Bali, or I went to, you know, the Bahamas, or, you know, something like this. So then here it's like, you know, you went to this tirtha, that tirtha, these are also. While he was speaking of these, stretching upon that celestial bed, sleep, O Janamijaya, stole upon him. He rose in the morning, awakened by sweet songs and melodious notes of the Venus, and panegyrics and benedictions of the bards. sleep stolen away, because if your health is good, you just lay down, basically you just fall asleep. Right? That you're trying to sleep and you stay awake, that's not so good. If you just fall asleep. And then in the morning you just wake up, then that's considered, you know, the best. That's the best position. After he had gone through the necessary acts and ceremonies, he was affectionately accosted by him of the Vrishni race. Riding upon a golden car, the hero then set out for Dwarka, the capital of the Yadavas. O Janamijaya, for honoring the son of Kunti, the city of Dwarka was well adorned. Even all the gardens and houses within it. The citizens of Dwarka, desiring of beholding the son of Kunti, began to pour eagerly into the public thoroughfares by hundreds of thousands. In the public squares and thoroughfares, hundreds and thousands of women, mixing with the men, swelled the great crowd of the Bhojas, the Vrishnis, and the Andakas that had collected there. Arjuna was welcomed with respect by all the sons of Bhojas and the Vrishnis and the Andakas. He, in his turn, worshipped those that deserved his worship, receiving their blessings. The hero is welcomed with an affectionate reception by all the young men of the Yadava tribe. He repeatedly embraced all that were equal to him in age, wending then to the delightful mansion of Krishna that was filled with gems and every article of enjoyment. He took up his abode there with Krishna for many days. So you notice any difference between this rendition and the Bhagavatam rendition of this same story? No one notices. Yes? In the Bhagavatam, then, because Krishna is very clever. This means we'll see differences sometimes between the Puranas, or between the Puranas and Bhagavatam. Because you're talking about different kalpas, different times that this is all happening. Right? It means is that this story is not the story that is happening at this last Kali Yuga. I mean this last Dwapara Yuga. That was Swayam Krishna. Right? This is one that's happening in another time. Right? Because there's a purpose of that, so religious principles of the prominent one and everything like this. But Krishna takes great delight in, because he wrote the rules, in having fun with them. So in the Bhagavatam, Arjuna doesn't enter Dwarka in such a royal fashion. Here it shows that Arjuna, no matter what his position, he's very respectable, and so therefore he's appreciated by everyone. The other one is Krishna's having some fun. So Arjuna comes dressed as a sannyasi, right? So that's not exactly what you call the most religious position, so Krishna has fun like that. Okay, so that ends the, what was that called? The Arjuna Vanavasa Parva. So now we start the Subhadra Harana Parva. Right? It means these are all the 100 parvas within the 18 main parvas, these small ones. Section 221. Vaishampayana said, O best of monarchs, within a few days after this, there commenced on the Raivataka mountain a grand festival of the Vrishnis and the Andakas. At the mountain festival of the Bhojas, the Vrishnis, and the Andakas, the heroes of those tribes began to give away much wealth unto Brahmins by thousands. The region around that hill, O king, was adorned with many a mansion, decked with gems, and many an artificial tree of gaudy hue. Okay. The musicians struck up in concert, the dancers began to dance, and the vocalists to sing. The youth of the Vrishni race, endued with great energy, adorned with every ornament, and riding on their gold-decked cars, looked extremely handsome. The citizens, some on foot and some in excellent cars, with their wives and followers, were there by hundreds and thousands. There was the Lord Haladara, right? This one could be a capital L, roving at will, hilarious with drink, accompanied by his wife Revati and followed by many musicians and vocalists. There came Ugrasena also, the powerful king of the Vrishni race, accompanied by his 1,000 wives and followed by sweet singers. Rokmineya and Shamba also, ever furious in battle, roved there, excited with drink, adorned with floral wreaths of great beauty and with costly attires, disported themselves like a pair of celestials. Akrura, Sharana, Gada, and Babru, Nishata, Charudeshna, Pritu, and Vipritu, Satyaka, Satyaki, Bankara, Maharaba, Harikya, and Uddhava, and many others whose names are not given, accompanied by their wives, that were followed by bands of singers, adorned that mountain festival. When that delightful festival of immense grandeur commenced, Vasudeva and Partha went about together, beholding everything around. While wandering there, they saw the handsome daughter of Vasudeva, Bhadra by name, decked with every ornament, in the midst of her maids. As soon as Arjuna beheld her, he was possessed by the god of desire. Then, O Bharata, that tiger among men, Krishna, observing Partha contemplate her with absorbed attention,
said with a smile, "How is this? Can the heart of one that rangeth the woods be agitated by the god of desire? This is my sister, Oparta, and the uterine sister of Sharana. Blessed be thou, her name is Bhadra, and she is the favorite daughter of my father. Tell me if thy heart is fixed upon her, for I shall then speak to my father myself."
Right. So now this is all being arranged very nicely, we see here.
Right. Arjuna answered, "She is Vasudev's daughter and Vasudev's and Vasudev's sister, Krishna's sister, endued with so much beauty. Whom can she not fascinate? If this thy sister, this maid of the Vishnu race, becometh my wife, truly may I win prosperity in everything. Tell me, O Janardana, by what means I may obtain her. To get her, I will achieve anything that is achievable by man."
That's why if you want to work anything out, work it out before marriage. Because before marriage, the man's willing to do anything. After marriage, he becomes a bit lazy.
Vasudeva answered, "O bull amongst men, self-choice hath been ordained for the marriage of Kshatriyas, but that is doubtful in its consequences," right? Just like war. War is doubtful. Better conciliation, because you can speak, and even if it doesn't go quite so well, you still have opportunities. But war, you may win, you may lose, right? So Swayamvar also, the self-choice, she'll pick somebody, but what if she just picks someone else, like that? Who knows what's the reason, what happened, she just got shy, and did something else. You know, you can't be guaranteed like that. So he's also showing the same principle here. "But that is doubtful in its consequences, Oparta, as we do not know this girl's temper and disposition." Yeah, Krishna is saying that, right? Yes, we don't know. And that knows everything. Yeah, we don't know. Okay. Oparta. Or we can say is he's God and he knows everything and he doesn't know what that is. Means if he doesn't know, nobody's going to know. So don't worry about it if you're thinking, no one could figure them out, right? So don't worry. Yes.
Why is it considered better when the parents arrange it rather than the kids arrange it themselves?
Why is it better if the parents are into it than if the kid arranges it? See, because in a marriage you're doing more. See, the two persons, they just see it that it's them only. But actually, a marriage means you're bringing two families together. So if the families themselves don't get along, then there'll always be trouble, because you always have relatives. Relatives are always going to interact. Relatives are always going to expect things from you. You know, some kind of dealing, or you know, some service or endeavor or some interaction. So then if there's not a common platform between the families, it won't be pleasant. You'll have to live on your own, and living on your own doesn't really work so great, you know, like that. Means if by living on your own it will increase your spiritual endeavor, because that way then you'll make the endeavor rather than just the family does it and you'll take part or not as you please. That's okay. Does that make sense? For spiritual, then it's okay to, you know, how you say, have a nuclear family. You know, it's just the parents and the children. But if it's on the material platform, the family, then the more it's connected, the better, because then there's more support, you know, like that, like the girl in raising the child, especially in the early years, then, you know, taking the advice and support of her own mother is very, very important. You know, so many different things are there that are important, that are there, the support of the father, right? That gives a lot of strength to the girl. Like that. So it's just always nice if you know your parents appreciate. So that's one aspect. The other aspect is that when Cupid strikes, then it's desire. But it doesn't mean that desire means you have the result, or that it's necessarily a proper observation of the field. You know what I'm saying? Sankarshan means you by gyan, you understand the field. You know what the field is. So you know the qualities of the boy or the girl. Does that make sense?
but it presumed is there, like here he's just seen her. So seeing her naturally, then one's going to be attracted by certain qualities. But there are qualities in a girl that everybody's attracted to. If there wasn't such a thing, how is it that you have, you know, entertainers or magazines, right? You have one girl and millions of people buy the magazine because they like looking at the girls. So that means there is some generic concepts of beauty that many people appreciate. So that's not good enough to choose the right person, right? It means the person should be attractive, yes. Then you want to interact. But there has to be more than that. It's the person that you have to be, you know, attracted to, rather than just the form or some of the subtleties. So then, because of this, you don't actually know what is the nature. You don't actually know, you know, in other words, you don't know what is going to be their nature, how much security is going to be there in the relationship. You know, in other words, the girl doesn't know the boy's nature to understand security. The boy doesn't know the girl's nature to understand the happiness. So that's why then you need other people to help take part. So you have, one is astrological charts, you have the parents themselves know their own children, they know each other, and this way others can help you actually make the decision, because the romantic element is very powerful, it's very attractive, but how long does it last, right? You know, it's like, depending upon what it is, but you know, putting it in the immortal words of one woman, she said, the day the woman is pregnant, that day the honeymoon is over. Right? And so all those things that, you know, the nice things, the butterflies flying, the music swelling, the, you know, the spinning in slow motion through the fields, and every time you come behind another tree you have another outfit on, all that stops when the first child is in the womb, right? And then after that, there it's reality. Then you're talking about security, right? Before that, the woman is more concerned with pleasure. At this time, then she's concerned with security, right? So that security means she has to be able to depend upon the man. For that, she has to be able to know that he's there. And because of her extra need for security, means she's going to be extra touchy. And being extra touchy means the boy has to be extra qualified. Otherwise, he's going to become upset. One, he won't get as much attention as the child. Two, is because of that need for security, there will be extra, instability, right? So he has to then work even more hard, you know, and in his mind seemingly get less back personally, but that more that he puts in then comes out in the how much the child is taken care of and everything like that. So if he can transfer his attention now to the child, that becomes the common point rather than the romantic, then it works very well. But if you can't do that, then you have a problem. So that's why simply basing the relationship on looks or some romantic interaction will not be enough to make a relationship last a lifetime. You know, the Vedic concept is generally if one is attached, it takes a lifetime to properly understand the workings of the relationship, to be peaceful in it, to, be satisfied in it, to connect one's desires to Krishna, to be able to pull oneself out of it. So 3 years is not good enough. You know, 3 years in alimony, it's not quite enough to move you on, you know, to the, you know, transcendental platform or to Vanaprastha. So you want to give yourself 20 to 30 years like that and then make it work properly. Does that make sense? Up to now, because otherwise people don't know like that. Because especially when the girl is at anybody who approaches her, she will be attracted by. Right? That's why girls shouldn't be out so they can be approached. Because a boy approaches a girl, he's attractive. Just so he's made it, because that means she's important. So naturally a girl wants to feel important. Right? So she shouldn't be, she should be at home being important, right? So that means the parents, you know, relatives, well-wishers, those persons should be making her feel important, right? If they're not, then naturally she's going to look elsewhere for it to be importance, and then that importance then comes, you know, from some boy who feels that she's nice, like that. And for so that's why she will be there, though her brain's working, but the need for emotion overwhelms the intelligence. The boy, when he becomes emotional, his brain stops working. So then how can he make a proper decision? Right? It just won't work. Others have to make the arrangements. Does that make sense? So that's another psychological consideration. Is that okay? Right? That's why the thing is you're making proper arrangements with, you know, based on the nature of the person and, how you say, with also with consent and everything. Right? Because naturally, if there's mutual attraction, that's always going to be better. But still, others should be helping in the process. Otherwise, you're not guaranteed at all. You know, just because you picked it yourself doesn't mean you know what you're doing. You know, like that. Is that okay? Okay. Yes.
You mentioned about when
about
the relationship between man and woman, about ceremony, like that. But what's happening when a woman doesn't have any child?
Well, what happens if she doesn't have a child?
Yes. And, what is the relation? It's like still romantic.
It's a relationship. Oh, so now it means so you're thinking of better no child and keep the romance and that. Okay, keeping your options open here. Okay. See, the whole point is romance is a natural thing, but romance is based on subtlety, on fineness, right? That's what romance is. It's subtlety, you know. It's appreciation of subtlety. So basically speaking, women appreciate already subtlety, or at least within their class. Does that make sense? You know? Means a tough woman still has more sense of finity than a tough man, right? So therefore, the real question of romance is all on the man. If the man does not appreciate the fineness and is not able to, if he's not able to appreciate it and relate and interact on that platform, there is no romance. The woman may try to get something started, some interaction, but if the man doesn't respond on that platform, it will stop. So most of the time, why most families there is no romance is because of that. The man is not subtle enough or trained enough to understand how to deal with subtleties. That's why in the Vedas, the subtleties are so much more important, right? Your English, your math, your other skills are useful for your occupation, right? Means if someone says, you go to school, you get a degree, they'll talking about economics, right? They'll say you can get a job, you can get money. But no one ever anywhere is ever saying that by learning these things that are in occupation, that it will improve your character. Character is a whole different training. And without it, if there isn't refinement in the training, in the character, if there's not humility, if there's not service attitude, if there's not respect, if there's not cleanliness, right? If there's not regularity, then there's no way that a man will ever be successful in a relationship with a woman. Can't. It's mathematically impossible. You know, it's against the science. So that's why the brahmachari training is so important, because those are the qualities you learn as a brahmachari. They're the same qualities that will take you back to Godhead, right? So that's the point. That's what it comes down to. The same qualities that I need to make the family relationship work as good as it gets, you know, perfect as it gets in the material world, are the same qualities I need to go back to Godhead. So then after 30 years, you go, what am I doing here? Right? But I wouldn't learn those qualities to this depth as a brahmachari because I was distracted by material desire. But now, in family life, I apply the same qualities, and I have to apply them more to get the proper interaction that I'm looking for. So therefore, the family life has been very good because I've developed all the qualities I need to go back to Godhead. But I was unable to learn them directly by just straight devotional activity. I had to learn them indirectly through applying the rules of Varnashram. Right? But in any case, what does it matter? Right? Bhaktivinoda said, beg, borrow, or steal, but, you know, get a taste for the holy name and that. So beg, borrow, steal, get the qualities you need to go back to Godhead. Right? To become conscious. Because the brahmachari may be conscious, not conscious. The naistika brahmachari is conscious. That's why whenever you meet him, he's nice, he's humble, he's all those things. The upakurvana may or may not be. Right? But the man in the associate, the woman makes him conscious. You have to be conscious. Every word you say, every tone of voice, every movement, one of them is wrong, you're in trouble. Ah, the lights went off. Right? Okay. Does that make sense? So the whole point is there, romance is simply dependent upon the man. Like that. The point is the volume of it goes down when there's children because children take a lot of time and energy. They need it. Right? Up to the age of 5, the boys must get full attention. After that, then it's the job of the teacher to give full attention. Right? Girls deserve full attention from, you know, time they're born up until the time they leave. That's kind of the way it is. You know, like, or let us say, from the time they're born up to the time that, once they cross childbearing age. After that, then basically they just give back. They still have to be protected, but then that, that inherent trippiness is gone. I'm saying the battery is full. It just takes 50 years, but battery is charged. And now they just give. Before that, they just take, you know, and then once they have children, then they take from the husband, give to the children, and then when they're older, after childbearing, then they just give, as long as they're in an environment where they can do that. Understand? So the whole point is it will be reduced to romantic. It's not that it disappears. But for someone who doesn't know what they're doing, it has disappeared because the woman won't try anymore, right? You go goo goo gaga to the baby and it does make noises and does smile, but you know. So therefore, you know, she's tired of trying with the husband and, you know, putting on nice clothes and perfumes and cooking nice things and him not saying anything, right? The kid will respond. So therefore, romance is over. You understand? That's the point. But if the man understands the position, the nature, the relationship, then there'll be the pleasant interactions and all that, that subtle and emotional interactions, but it still is the child will take precedence. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So therefore, it still goes back to the man. The man wants to be, yes, we're the men, we're the leaders and this and that, but it takes the responsibility comes. The men want to be the men and have the women do everything. That's cheating. The men want to be the men, be one. And if you're not, then be quiet. Right? Like that. You know, all this, profiling and, you know, all this stuff, boisterous and all that, it's useless. The point is the talk is cheap. They can only say that around the men. But if the women, they can't say that, right? If another man's in the room, then they'll talk about, yes, you know, the women, they should be this, they should be... But if there's no men in the room, they won't say that. Unless they're willing to for 3 days of not being spoken to, then they can say whatever they like, you know? You're free, you're independent. Yes?
Why is it in our society general bodies seem so uninformed? They think, like, in the Gurukul, the boys, they only learn mantras, and the girls, they only learn how to wash pots. Why is it that character is considered second class?
Because you're dealing with people who have come from a culture where character is 10th class. So second class, we're doing pretty good. When you're coming from a culture that is based on the principles of, you know, Mleccha and Yavana, character doesn't mean anything to them.
That's why it falls after academics.
Because see, here's the Western culture, its point is sense gratification. The only reason you want money is sense gratification. You want position is sense gratification. You want a nice car, a nice house, a nice, you know, set of threads, you know, all these different things. It's because you're going to attract that sense gratification, which is at your level of sophistication. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. You know, you're driving the Porsche, then you want to be sitting in the Porsche with somebody who's wearing something from Gucci. Right? You know, not from Woolworths. That's all. It's the same experience, it's the same skin, but whatever, hey, you know, it's just, it looks better, the prestige and all. But the point is the same, what you're trying to get at. So then, economics is just for sense gratification, because it's extended sense gratification. Pranamoya is just extended anamoya. It's not in its own category, it's an extension of that. Like that. Manamoya is in its own category. That's the emotions, that's dharma, that's religion, that's all those different things. So, therefore, in your economics, that area, that you get by your particular education, right? And because Brahminical culture is not valued, therefore, Brahminical education and that prowess is not important. Though, we probably have, out of 400 temples, you know, 100 temples that need temple presidents, need, you know, there's probably even more that need, you know, full-time cooks, full-time pujaris, full-time preachers, all Brahminical things you will get, you'll be taken care of, but who's interested? Because it's Brahminical, it's not Mleccha Yav, it's not bourgeois, right? Bourgeois means you got money, you can show it off, you got some facility. Does that make sense? Who wants to live a Brahminical lifestyle, right? You know what I'm saying? Who wants to wash their feet after they go to the bathroom? Who wants to do all that stuff, right? It's much easier to live the Mleccha culture. It's very simple, straightforward, basically. You know, you don't worry about it, right? You know, I say it's just do it, right? You know, that's it. So, you say, because of that, there's no value in Brahminical culture, and the emphasis is on economics, therefore, modern education is the only thing that's valued. And if you don't see that, means even if you're explaining that you have it, if it's not explained first, like if you open a discussion on education, you start with character first, and then after that describe the academics, they'll say, oh, you don't care for academics, you put no emphasis on academics. Like that. So you have to say academics first, and the first thing out of your mouth has got to be, you know, English. And then after that has to be math. Then after that is, you know, various modern skills. Then you can mention all as extracurricular, you know, you do Sanskrit or mantras or, you know, a little Shastra and these, and then it's all nice, nice things. Oh, you know, it's nice, you know, like you have some dried flowers and a little vase in the corner and, you know, little nice things in that. But it's not the house, it's not the furniture. Like that. That's English and math. And if you have that, there's this idea, therefore you have everything. Right? But unfortunately, all those people with the English and math that have everything don't have a life. And so for these people, they don't know what a life is, therefore they don't know what they're missing, right? A blind person can't appreciate colors. A tone-deaf person can't appreciate music. A bull can't appreciate a variety of flavors. Right? A bull only tastes one flavor. It doesn't matter what it eats. It's the same flavor. Right? That's why in the Shastra it says he has a tongue like a bull. It doesn't matter what you give him. It's just, yeah, nice. You know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that's the principle is that human life is a complete package. It's not overbalanced in one way or the other. So if one has felt that in the past has been overbalanced with a misapplication of Vedic, you know, pro-Vedic kind of like values, it's not corrected by an overbalance of contemporary. Right? In other words, the Vedic includes the contemporary. That's what's little known, is that the Vedic, if you look in Krishna book, what Krishna learned, then what do you say? Means Purana, means history, means from pre-creation to the future, right? Well, that's bigger than modern, which is from secondary creation to now, right? And if they go future, they go 20, 30 years. Right? But Veda is before creation to pre-creation to the future, right? They go all the way to the end of Kali Yuga, right? A little bit broader. And it includes that you must know what's going on today, right? How can a king know Purana if he doesn't know the other families, their traditions, their strengths, their allies? It means you have to know all that. So modern is already included in Vedic. The difference is modern will be modern, as modern means it's not connected to Krishna. But in the Vedic concept, modern is connected to Krishna. So therefore you don't call it modern. Right? It's contemporary, but it's not modern. Right? Contemporary means what's going on now. Modern means what's not Vedic. Does that make sense? That's Brigham Muni's definition of modern. Right? What's not Vedic, that's modern. That means millions of years ago they had modern. Right? It's always been there. So this, you know, now we're in post-postmodern. No, you're still in modern. Right, you know. Does that make sense? So it's a misunderstanding of the broadness of the Vedic curriculum because no one's ever experienced it. Right? You go to a government school, you have the standard curriculum that's there, you don't like it, but you do it. You go to a private school, you had a little bit more interest, so therefore you see those things. You like the, the academics, you like their extracurriculars. But who has been to a Vedic school that has more than that? Right? Who has been, it's like if you took, you know, every concept of education there is, including a finishing school, and put that into one, that's the Vedic education. But if you haven't experienced it, like if I talk about education, the ashram, I mean the only people that are interested really in hearing about ashram and the details of it, when you talk to any parent or any adult or any educator, and I'm talking across blanket, I mean blanket, is if they themselves went to a boarding school, went to a gurukul, or they themselves ran an ashram in a gurukul. They didn't do one of these three, they couldn't care less about what happens in the ashram other than you have it. You can tell them one or two things, that's it. It's a 2-minute discussion on ashram. Others, they can discuss ashram because they've been there. So that's what I'm saying. It's just, there's no interest because no one knows what it is. Basically, if you take Americans, how many have even gone to private school, let alone a boarding school? Take the British, a lot have gone to boarding school. Right? Also, a few Europeans and some Indians. They're the only ones you can talk about it with. And if you want to talk about character and values, you can only basically talk to Asians about it, really seriously. Otherwise, you can talk to third world about it. Right? But the Asians are much closer in culture to the Vedic than anybody outside. And then after that's all the rest of the third world. And then after that, then you have the Anglo-Saxons. You know, like that. They're the most unclued in people when it comes to culture. Blending culture and education, lifestyle, they don't seem to have the capacity. It's there, of course, because they're human, but they ignore it like it's a plague or something. I don't know what is it like that. It's been one of my greatest bewilderments, amusements, frustrations, is this single fact. Like that. Does that make sense? Yeah? So why they don't, when Prabhupada talks about it so highly, why
when we try different things and we fail at it, that we try and try again because Prabhupada gave it. Like the big temple, how many times have they tried and how many times have they failed? But they're still going at it. Why? Because Prabhupada wanted it. The Prabhupada's educational system, you try it once, it fails, they just throw it out with the garbage. I don't understand that. It doesn't make sense. Right? And I'm telling you, there's no one that could explain it. So that, why, I have no idea. You know what I'm saying? You have a school where you come at 6 in the morning, you go at 4 or 5 in the afternoon. That's 10, 11 hours in a day. How many pots are there to wash? You know what I'm saying? How many pots? You know, especially if 20 people are washing them, you know? Unless, of course, you're running a business and you're trucking them in from Calcutta, washing them and sending them back. Right? And that's how you're running the school. Then maybe, okay. Then maybe we're on to something here. But I mean, they don't even think. It's just something I heard from someone who heard. And it's a reliable source, right? That's always the best cliche. I've got reliable sources. Yes, reliable in what? Right? Reliable in Gurukul education? No. I have heard from someone who heard from someone who heard from someone who heard. Like that. So I can't really give you an answer. I can only give you what are the symptoms that I have perceived that possibly may be the reasons. But other than that, I don't see any logic involved. Because no one will take the time to figure it out. Right? I have not had one other educator other than someone who's run ashrams, be able to sit and discuss in detail Gurukul. And that's it. No one else from any category. Right? And I'm talking about 25 years of talking. And that's what I do, is talk, right? So, like that.
So then it's up to the second generation to show that it works?
Basically. When the second generation is running the system, they're training the third generation, then you'll see reality. And then when the third generation is the ones as the teachers, and the fourth, they're teaching the fourth generation, then you'll be, you know, then this will be what you're hearing. This is the lifestyle. You know what I'm saying? Because Prabhupada said it's the third generation that will do. But that means your second generation has to be second, not one and a half. You know what I'm saying? When the second is committed to Krishna consciousness, then their children, they're going to be, you know, very, very special. Right? Not that the second's not special, I'm just saying they'll be more, it'll be obvious. Like the second generation, Krishna consciousness is their culture. But they may or may not live it. But the third generation, they'll live it. So that would be the difference. Okay? Yeah, so we'll end today. Yeah,
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jai Nita Gaura Premanandi. Yes, sir.
There's also a lot of envy involved.
That you know, we don't believe.
Yes, that this is the people, the ones, the educators, they know that themselves they will have to be ashram teachers, that they don't have the ability. So it's more easy to just brush off what they cannot do.
Because those who have done ashram, they're a completely different kind of person.
Yeah, they can talk with them very freely, very openly.
It's not a difficult person. Yeah. Even if they've just done academics. And I found the best teachers are those that can run an ashram, but they're either running ashram or not. So even an academic teacher, they could run one,
Yes.
They're also very good teachers.
They understand what means education.
Yeah. It's a whole different concept.
In Spanish, you say educado is the person who has home good training from the house. No, it's in the education doesn't come from the school.
Yes.
And malcriado means bad training from the house. Oh. And a malcriado is like, criado means created, basically. Okay. Not brought up by the family.
Well, also you have kriya is action, and mud means crazy.
Yeah. Yes.
So mud kriya.
Mud kriya, see. So it's without this a training of home.